everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week, and the Eagles are now 10-1 as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 121. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Greg Cosell from NFL Films to discuss our thoughts after the Eagles took care of business in their 31-3 victory over the Chicago Bears. Greg and I both watched the tape in that game, so we will share our thoughts on that before looking ahead at the Eagles matchup against Seattle this Sunday night. This week in our scouting report, I want to look at a rookie who has been forced into playing time and has looked pretty good when he's been out there on the field. We'll get into who that is later on in the show, but before we get into all of that, let's not waste any more time. Greg Cosell and I break down the win over the Chicago Bears and preview those Seattle Seahawks on film. Let's get to that chat now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Back for another installment of Chalk Talk on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. NFL Film senior producer Greg Cosell. Greg, here we are. It's week 12 already in the NFL.
13, is it?
Week 13? I always lose track by the time I get to this
it's
point.
It's week 13.
It's unbelievable that we're at this point.
The Eagles had a bye, and they're 10-1, well, so it's week 13.
And just like we all scripted, it was the Eagles are now 10-1.
You had them 11-0, I believe.
I think so,
yes,
but
yes.
I didn't want to make you feel bad.
Right.
But, you know, the Eagles are obviously a great win against Chicago in that this was a take-care-of-business win.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people saw this as a trap game with a Chicago team that only had three wins on the year, albeit three good wins, only three wins on the season. Coming here to Lincoln Financial Field, the Eagles coming off such a high with all the wins that they've been able to string together in a row. I think being able to take care of business on both sides of the football, I thought was key, even though it was a sloppy game overall. It wasn't a perfect game on either side of the ball.
But you know what I really liked about it? And you could say the same thing about the Denver game and the same thing earlier in the season about the Arizona game, is that instead of fighting through a game and sort of wondering how it's going to play out, they're getting ahead early. And I think that's absolutely critical, and it says a lot about the mindset of the team.
Does it worry you at all that this team, really, the last time they've been challenged in the fourth quarter was week 6?
I know.
Everything's been kind of a blowout. Does that work concern you at all? I mean,
well,
they've got some tough opponents coming down the stretch here, so they're going to get challenged at some point in the coming weeks.
You know, look, then it depends on your point of view, the idea that do you have to play – tough games, and most people would say yes. But on the other hand, when you game plan for any opponent, you're game planning so that what you put in works effectively and allows you to execute at a high level. And even though this past Sunday was not a high level, they still got ahead. It was 24-0.
I believe so.
It was 24-0, yes. So they still got ahead, and that's what you look to do. Now, I think you're right. In Seattle and then at the Rams, I would tend to think that these games will not be blowouts. They'll be tight, close games. And I think with Seattle missing a lot of players, but a team with a lot of pride and a team that's played in a lot of playoff games, that will be a physical battle.
Yeah, a team that beat them pretty soundly a year ago.
So, right.
You know that the Eagles will have that on their mind. I think there's two sides to that coin, because you can look at it and say, look, the Eagles, everything they're doing is it's clicking. Like you said, they're drawing up game plans, and they're executing it well.
Yeah.
Everything's working. And they're playing fast with a lot of confidence.
Yep.
And that's one of the things you really can't buy that midseason. You're hoping to have that kind of, for all other words, to have that kind of swag going into the postseason, which it certainly looks like this Eagles team is going to do. It's good to have that, but we'll just see how once you go up against some of these other tougher teams, and players in the locker room have called this stretch here, this three-game stretch, kind of a measuring stick.
Yes.
It'll be very interesting to see how they perform.
And they'll be aware of that.
Yeah.
And you know, you start to hear all that stuff, Fran, and I never know how to respond to this. Everybody has their point of view. There's no right or wrong until we then have access to the results. But the idea that, it would be good for them to lose a game now.
That's silly. I don't.
Yeah, but you know,
I
heard
exactly
that the other night.
Yep.
I can't remember, probably watching one of the games.
Yep.
I heard someone say that. And, hey, there are people who believe that. You know, I don't get into those kinds of conversations because I don't feel like there's any way to – I don't know what that means,
right,
to be honest with you.
I don't think the undefeated Patriots lost in the Super Bowl because they didn't lose a game
Correct.
In the regular season.
Correct.
Let's talk about this game, though.
Yeah.
And let's start on offense. Overall thoughts on Carson Wentz and his performance against the Chicago Bears?
Solid, not his best. But when I watched the tape, I thought it was better than it was, believe it or not, watching the game on television with you.
Why so?
You know, he missed a couple. But I thought for the most part, he was really, really good before the snap of the ball.
Really good again.
Really good before the snap of the ball. We did the play on Eagles.com, but when I really got a chance to truly break it down in more detail and look at it with my remote in my office, you know, 10 times, the touchdown to Aguilar was just high-level quarterbacking.
Big time.
Yeah. And yeah, so I thought he actually, you know, he's reached a level, I think, which is pretty remarkable, and I was actually talking about this with my matchup group in the office today, is that we're now taking for granted at what level he's at mentally for a guy who's only in his second year. Now, can he come out and throw some picks? Of course, every quarterback can. But the mental level at which he's at right now for a second-year quarterback is pretty darn good.
You know what underrated part of that play, the touchdown to Aguilar, which he obviously puts it on with good accuracy, allows him to create some yards after catch. But how quickly he was able to reset on the snap. Because the ball is hitting his hands, and he's got his eyes on the corner.
Correct.
He's looking at the slot pressure.
The slot pressure, yeah.
But so quickly, he's able to flip his hips to the opposite sideline and reset and put that ball on a rope to the – I mean, it's a bubble screen. You're not reinventing the wheel here.
No.
But just a really impressive – like you said, the mental side of it was the most impressive part.
Yeah, and that to me is what really, really stands out about his game. I mean, he's a physically gifted kid. We knew that when he came out of North Dakota State. But the mental side at this level in his second year is really impressive.
What were your thoughts when you watched the bubble screen gone wrong, or the chip screen gone wrong to Corey Clement on his 3rd and 9? They come out and they look like they're going to show pressure from the right. Chicago does, and they're going to run a screen.
Oh, yeah.
And he sees pressure. And
that
he,
was zero. They
was
went zero.
Zero.
Yeah. So, which, again, that's the mental part because he knew where the pressure was coming from. So they took away the screen because he thought perhaps that McManus would actually blitz instead of peeling off to take Clement. But once then McManus stayed out there and peeled off to take Clement, he knew pressure was coming from his front side. And the poise that he showed on that play was absolutely remarkable. But it started with his awareness.
Yeah, I mean, you know that the pressure's coming from there, and you know that if that play's dead, because, again, it's 3rd and 9, so you're throwing that in the dirt, you're giving up on the drive. His ability to then duck out of pressure, know where it's coming from, and then scramble, pick up the first down, that was outstanding as well. The first touchdown to Zach Ertz, was that about what you saw? We broke that play on PhiladelphiaEagles.com on the All-22 review as well, about what you thought we saw when we watched it yesterday?
Yeah, and we still couldn't figure out what the defense was. What did you decide it was? Figure it out.
Because it
had man elements and it had zone elements.
And it was initially, to me, it looked like I came down to like a cover one with a man in the hole. That's kind of what I ended up on. The one where I was really confused was just the touchdown to Alshon, where you know, I was actually going back and forth with Dan Orlovsky, a former NFL quarterback, about it on Twitter. And he said, you know, that must have been their empty check. And they just, the Eagles went into empty, and they just kind of robotically checked into that. And it was, they're bracketing number two. They're bracketing Kenyon Barner at the bottom.
Right.
Like, with no idea of who the
Dan's
receivers
a good guy
are.
Too.
Yeah.
He's really smart.
Overall, the Eagles, you know, capitalized on the mistakes on both sides.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, and again, like I said, we're at the point where Wentz wasn't as sharp as he's been in other games, but it wasn't as if he had a bad game.
Right, exactly. Run game. One wrinkle I really enjoyed, they did it a couple times because they ran that wham play a few times in this game.
Yep.
There were a few where it was against an odd front where Jason Kelce was covered up, and he was unable to get up to the second level. So instead of Brent Celek whamming the defensive
He went up to the second level.
Correct. I thought that was a nice little wrinkle that they added.
Well, it's funny because there's one I remember specifically where he was looking for the first level guy.
Definitely.
And then realized – and by the way, that's really good by Celek, because one thing you should never do in the run game is, in a sense, look for someone that you're going to pass.
Right.
You know, you never block someone behind you
in
the run game. So, no, you're exactly right.
That'll set up a block in the back kind of.
Right.
And you're leaving
a defender in front
that's
unblocked. But, no, I remember that play specifically. But the wham concept, it's all based on the defensive front. The play we broke down on the All-22, he got the 3 technique. Then there was one where he got the 1 technique just based on the defensive front.
Yep.
So it's really based on the defensive front. And I think you're going to see that concept, whether it's Wham or Trap or both, against Seattle, because they're an aggressive, penetrating defense, and Sheldon Richardson is a really, really quick three technique.
We talked about this on the All-22 review about how, you know, this week it was more of a wham game for against the Chicago Bears. The week before against Dallas, it was more of a trap game. And again, the difference being who you're using to block that three technique. The trap game is more about the guard on the backside coming across.
Yep.
The wham is more about the tight end or
on
a fullback or a running back coming and blocking on the front side. But the great thing about having both of those in your arsenal is that if you're a three technique on a defensive line and you fly upfield against the Eagles offense and you're unblocked, you know the block's coming from somewhere. But you don't know where it's coming from.
Correct.
Could be coming from either way. And to me, that's the idea. It's almost like chipping an edge rusher.
Right.
Once you do it enough, now they're almost conditioned to expect contact, and now it's taking your objective away from getting to the football.
You're making the three technique have to think, because three techniques don't like to think. They like to penetrate. So now if you're Sheldon Richardson, you've got some film study to do this week, because you have to be aware of formation. You have to be aware, is a Brent Celek or a Zach Ertz, whoever it may be, is there someone on that side who could possibly wham you? You have to be aware of that, and it just might give you a little pause.
Yeah, and the fact that the Eagles also incorporate those split zone with the tight end comes all the way
across
the formation.
Yep.
Now you're messing with those linebackers, because if they see Brent Celek or Zach Ertz lined up as a wing, and they're thinking, oh, this could be wham, they're expecting something coming A-gap. Well, now this could be going the opposite way on a split zone.
And it's funny you say that, because the Niners had some success with that against the Seahawks this
couple
week
times
with
them.
A split zone concept.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if the Eagles decide to go that route or stick with the wham and trap that have worked over the last couple of weeks. This run game, because they're so multiple, and you and I have been talking about this now for a year and a half, this Doug Peterson run game and everybody on that offensive staff, so many layers to it and all the different things they do. Not as much of the speed and the read and the misdirection element that we saw maybe a year ago, but they'll come out and they'll hit you in a lot of different ways.
And, you know, obviously there's been a lot of talk about Carson Wentz, as there should be, but their run game, I mean, who would have thought this going back to the beginning of the season?
Right.
They're the best first down rushing team in the NFL. Okay, they run the ball on first down at 5.1 yards per clip. That's really good on first down.
Yeah, and this is going to be a top 10 run defense that they're going up against in Seattle. So that will certainly be one of the matchups that I think everybody's going to be focused on in this game. Let's go over to the Eagles defense and what was just a dominant.
I don't know what to say.
A dominant performance.
I mean, it was just, in some ways, it was like a college game where just the Eagles defensive line so overmatched the Bears offensive line that they didn't blitz very much. They didn't have to.
Yeah.
There was
a triple A gap pressure late when the twos were in. I don't know if you got to that
point. When
the twos were in, they ran a triple A gap pressure, which was really interesting. One guy who wasn't on the stat sheet, I don't believe if he was, it was maybe like a tackle here or there. I thought Derek Barnett looked really good in this game with his hands. I thought he was really competitive. There were a few snaps where I thought that's the guy they drafted.
It's going to be interesting, because I think Vinnie Curry's had a good year, but clearly Barnett's in rotation with him, particularly when they go to their sub-package D-line where they're now bringing pretty consistently Graham inside at D-tackle with Cox, and it's either Barnett or Curry at right defensive end, and I guess Long is at left defensive end.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's kind of been their number one sub-pressure or sub-package pressure group. Fletcher Cox, once again, dominant. Timmy Jernigan, so good against the run.
Jernigan is really a good player.
Yeah, no question.
And I don't know what you thought. I thought that Michael Kendricks really showed up.
He made a couple of really big-time plays from the backside.
He did. I mean, he showed great range and great pursuit speed. You know, I thought he flashed.
Yeah, in terms of the perimeter run game, that's where he's at his best.
Yeah.
Is when you know there's a play going away from
and
him,
he can
and
run.
He's left unblocked, and you could just see him get to the football on the perimeter. I thought that he really stood out in this game as well. I thought Bradham had his share of plays in this game. In the secondary, it was interesting. Now, we talked about last week about how they would match up to Tariq Cohen in certain sets, and we saw some big nickel from this team on Sunday where you saw – Corey Graham be the fifth defensive back, and it was really it seemed to be in response to some of those two back sets with Jordan Howard.
Yeah, it could have been. I mean, I would imagine that's what it probably was.
Yeah.
But it's funny because that was the tactic. It didn't really play out in the game though, because we never got to that.
Yeah, it was interesting to see how often they did go to that early on, and then Everybody on the outside as well. Just really kind of – Jalen Mills shows up week in and week out. He made a great play down the field late in the game. You see the competitiveness from Ronald Darby as well. Rodney McLeod playing a little bit in the slot, which I thought was interesting early on.
He was down in the box a little bit more than he normally is. And Jenkins played more snaps of single high than we've normally seen.
Do you think there was any reason behind that, or you think they were just kind of mixing things up?
Yeah, I don't know that. I think they're both – capable of course doing those things, so it'll be sometimes too you just give a different look and you give teams your future opponents something else to think about.
No question. I thought that was really interesting, and again, just an overall dominant.
I mean, after a while watching, I got through the first half and I watched the second half, into the fourth quarter when the regulars came out, but at halftime I was thinking to myself, I don't know what to say here. It was just dominant football.
Yeah.
It was physical dominance.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. You look at it and it's just like, all right, there's another three and out. No first downs in the first half.
They ran 16 plays, not counting the kneel down at the end of the first half. The Bears ran 16 offensive plays.
The Eagles ran almost 50.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Let's go over to next week's game, which is going to be a big matchup. I think a lot of people are really excited about this. Sunday Night Football against Seattle. This Seattle offense, we've seen them now. We saw them last year against this team. Obviously runs through Russell Wilson. They're not a great run team right now. They've been cycling backs in and out of the lineup over the course of the year. I feel like they've had six or seven different running backs. But the offense certainly flows through Russell.
Yeah, and even in the pass game, it's not really a structured execution pass game. They did that well this past week in the second half against San Francisco. But for the most part, this is not an offense that runs at a high efficiency level in terms of structure, timing, rhythm. It's very much a second reaction Russell Wilson offense. Now, that doesn't mean they can't make plays in structure, because they'll surprise you here and there. But for the most part, you must make sure that Russell Wilson, who with each game almost has an increasing tendency to move, often when he doesn't have to move, but this is the way he plays now, and he's obviously very good at it. You have to make sure you corral that.
They're one of those teams where there's not a lot of rhyme and rhythm where you really kind of get into a flow where you stop them, let's say, six, seven plays in a row. Maybe you get a three and out. Maybe you get a second one, and you feel pretty good about yourself. And then they run a double reverse pass to Jimmy Graham.
Correct.
Or then they run you have Russell Wilson stopped in the backfield and he scrambles for 28 yards.
On third and 11.
Yeah, he breaks the pocket and Doug Baldwin runs a great route and gets open.
Right.
And now they get you a first down. They find ways to steal big chunks of yards.
Correct.
And then they get down in the red zone and they toss it up to Jimmy Graham. And he's
they're
one
a hard
of the best
offense
to,
the to get a handle on, because there's not a lot of structure, but yet – because of the second reaction ability of Wilson, you never feel like they're out of it. Unless you're up 35-10, but you never feel like they're out of it. And then sometimes what happens, they've had a lot of games where you have that feeling and then they only score 10 points and you go, wow, their offense really wasn't very good.
Yeah.
But Russell Wilson has a unique ability to make plays on the move, improvisationally, second reaction, and you have to defend that.
One of the aspects of this game, and something that we're going to focus on in our show, in Eagles game plan, is their use of empty sets.
Correct.
And they're one of the biggest empty teams in the NFL. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I venture to guess that they probably run empty as much as probably anybody in the league. What are the benefits of empty? Why do you think they run so much of it? What can the Eagles fans expect to see when they see Russell Wilson by himself in the backfield in those empty sets?
It spreads out the defense first and foremost. It helps the quarterback see whether it's man or zone. Very often out of empty, they'll do a little shifting or motion, and that helps to find man or zone. It can create matchups that are favorable. It allows them to run in the pass game, the quick game, the three-step timing game, or the quick five-step timing game in which the ball gets out of Russell Wilson's hands quickly. It also, in spreading the defense, creates a lot of room for Russell Wilson to run. And when I say run, it could be by design, quarterback draws, or it could be just improvisationally. There's a lot of room on the field when the defense is spread out like that. And make no mistake about it, they encourage Russell Wilson to be improvisational.
You can tell by the way they play.
Yeah, they're not telling him don't do that.
Yeah.
They're encouraging him to make improvisational plays, and you know, we can debate whether that's good or bad, but that's the reality of their offense.
We've had this discussion a bunch of times off camera, just about the, you know, the quote unquote new wave of the quarterback position.
Yep.
And kind of where it's going. We've had lots of discussions about a player like a Baker Mayfield.
Sure.
Watching this offense in Seattle makes me think, like, all right, well, maybe Baker Mayfield can play in a scheme that's like that. But to your point that you made, we can argue whether or not that's good or not in terms of being overly productive
right.
and successful in the NFL.
And as much as, you know, we're going to have more of that conversation,
yes.
I'm really excited to go to the Combine and talk to a lot of different people about that, you know, not about just Baker Mayfield, but
of
the
course.
Philosophical approach, I still think that 99 out of 100 NFL guys would take Jared Goff over Baker Mayfield, you know, in terms of playing the position at the NFL level.
Right.
You know, so, but the reality is that's what the Seahawks offense has really evolved into over sort of the last year and a half, and that's the way they play. And keep one thing in mind. When their defense can keep games really close or keep the other team from scoring a lot of points, then that means that kind of offense can at least provide wins for you.
Yeah.
It may not be ideal or it may not be aesthetically pretty, but you can win games if the other team's only scoring 10 or 13 points.
Let's talk from a personnel standpoint. Overall thoughts on Jimmy Graham and kind of his role in the offense. What kind of a weapon is he for Russell Wilson?
It's been expanding a little bit. I think that, you know, when they do play in a little bit of structure, his role's, I think, been expanding. He's obviously phenomenal in the red zone.
Yeah, number one in red zone targets, catches, and touchdowns right now in the NFL.
Right, right. And it in a variety of ways. Obviously, yeah. There's been just the fade and the toss-up to him, but in other ways as well.
Yeah.
You know, he's clearly a weapon, and we'll see how much man the Eagles choose to play. They may choose to play more zone to have eyes on Russell Wilson in the backfield. If they play man, I imagine it's Malcolm Jenkins. You know, I think the other player who, to me, is Doug Baldwin. I think Doug Baldwin's
a really good
is
receiver.
A really good player.
Yeah,
and in an odd way, you can't fall asleep on Paul Richardson. He has his moments.
I was not big on him coming out of Colorado, and I feel like as we've played Seattle a few
yeah.
times since he's come out, he's gotten better each and every year.
Yep.
He looks pretty good, especially as a route runner.
I
now.
Agree. And he's got some burst.
You know, no,
yeah.
he's always had that verticality to him.
And keep one thing in mind. Russell Wilson has a really good arm.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it's one of those things where they don't execute in structure on any kind of consistent basis, but you can't go into a game saying, oh, they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Because that's how you get burned.
And then in the run game, like I said, the run game isn't a big part of what they do. They're bottom
They'd
third
like
in the league.
They'd like it to be, I think.
They'd like it to be, but
it's not there.
It's not overly effective.
See, the big mismatch in this game, but because of Wilson's improvisational ability, we'll see how it plays out, but the big mismatch in this game is the Eagles' D-line against the Seahawks O-line.
Yeah.
That's a big mismatch.
Yep.
But, you know, again, that's a we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that, you know, they're middle of the pack in terms of sacks, but I think
yeah.
that goes more to just the way that they play. You've got a lot of the empty, the quick game, and things like that. Obviously, Russell Wilson's ability to run away from pressure, he runs into his share of sacks at times, but he'll obviously run out of some as well. And in the run, it's been a mix and match in terms of these backs. I mean, a lot of people thought Thomas Rawls was going to be the guy. They gave Eddie Lacy a shot early in the year. The J.D. McKissic kid, I knew nothing about. I think he went to Arkansas State.
He did.
Knew nothing about him. And he's an athletic kid.
Yes.
He can be used in a lot of different ways.
I mean, he's this week's Tariq Cohen, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have Mike Davis, who they called up from the practice squad, who's been a player for them
South
as well
Carolina.
The last couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the last couple of weeks. So they'll kind of mix and match there in the run game. But it's going to be really – I agree. It's going to be that offensive line against this Eagles defensive line. Going to the other side of the ball, not quite the Legion of Boom. You know,
nope.
Obviously you have the injuries. Cam Chancellor was just announced on Monday. He is certainly out for the year.
Yeah, and his career might be over. It's a neck injury.
It's a shame.
I know.
And then you have Richard Sherman, obviously, with the injury a few weeks back. So they're missing some pieces, but a really good front seven.
Really good. And a ton of depth on the D-line. I mean – one player I remember talking about with you coming out of Maryland, I liked him a little more than you did. Hey, there's some guys. You liked Frank Clark more than I did, and you were right on that.
I loved
but
Frank Clark.
But Quentin Jefferson gets a lot of snaps for them, and he plays pretty well as in rotation as a three technique
yep.
with Sheldon Richardson.
Yeah, and Sheldon Richardson has been.
He's been really good.
Big addition.
Yeah.
Really disruptive at the three technique, not just against the pass, but also against the run. Has been very, very disruptive. Like you mentioned, I would expect to see, you know, some of those traps and some of those whams try and take advantage of his aggressiveness up front. Jaron Reed, a former second-round pick out of Alabama at nose tackle,
and
is very,
Nasir Jones,
well.
who jumps in and plays some one technique as well.
A rookie, yep. And then one of the big matchups, if you're looking at this Eagles offense against the Seattle defense, Halepulavadi Vaitai is going to see a lot of both Michael Bennett and Frank Clark. And those are two guys that in terms of their power and their ability to win low side, they can give Vaitai some issues. So I will be very intrigued to see how he's able to handle himself.
And one thing that the Seahawks do extremely well is with their front alignments, they create one-on-ones for their edge rushers. Now, so then it's up to the Eagles if – then there's a lot of factors involved. It's the nature of your pass game. Does your pass game take care of the rush with the drops? Do you try to leave Vaitai and Johnson one-on-one and just let it see what happens?
Right.
Do you then start with chips, which you'd prefer not to do because that presents a limitation for you with your pass game? But we'll see, because that is something to definitely look for in this game.
And then you go to the linebacker level, and I was talking with Ben Fennell about this earlier on Monday, and we're looking at, you know, Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright, one of the best linebacker tandems in the NFL, and then we're thinking, and we're like, you know what, the Eagles, they haven't faced a lot of top-end linebacker talent this year on game day. You know, they faced teams with good linebackers, but Luke Kuechly went out after about a quarter and a half. Sean Lee didn't play in the game. B.J. Goodson for the New York Giants didn't play in the game. And then after that, there haven't been a ton of super talented linebackers. Bobby Wagner is the real deal, one of the best linebackers,
the best
off the ball players in the league.
Yeah, without question. And he's good in every area. He can play the run really well. He's excellent in pass coverage. He doesn't play a lot of man, even when they play man. He's not the man defender, but he's got a great feel in the middle of the field. And the last couple of weeks with the injuries in the secondary, they haven't been blitzing quite as much and playing quite as much man. But when they do go cover one blitz, he's the blitzer.
He had a sack against the Eagles last year on a blitz.
Yeah, and he's really good.
Yeah, he's a very good blitzer.
Yeah.
And K.J. Wright, obviously a very talented player as
and
well.
And big, 250.
He's a big kid. Going to the secondary, you know, the injuries at corner have certainly hurt this team. You lose Cam Chancellor as well, and Bradley McDougal has stepped in as strong safety and has been a box player for them. But looking at the corner spot, they were forced to sign Byron Maxwell, and he's had some starts. The rookie, though, the right corner, Shaquille Griffin, who missed the last couple weeks.
Is he going to be back this week?
It looks like he will be back. When you look at Shaquille Griffin, it was a third-round pick, I believe. What are you seeing from Griffin so far?
I think he's clearly gotten better as the season's gone on. I thought earlier in the year he was really inconsistent and erratic. He's long. He's athletic. I think he had to figure out where his eyes needed to go. Even when he played man, your eyes still have to go somewhere.
Yes.
And I think that he was having a hard time with that early in the season.
That's very interesting for you to say. Okay.
Do you agree?
I'm going to go over my notes on him from when he was in college.
Right.
And I wrote a lot of the same things about him when he was in college. And I agree with you that
he's gotten better
over the course of the year.
And I think that they feel that he can be a pretty big-time corner because of his length and his athletic ability.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun game because it's a talented team, one of the bigger tests the Eagles
have
faced.
It's a team with a lot of pride, too. I mean, they've had injuries, but, you know, that's a tough place to play, and it's a tough team, and they can still win in a number of different ways.
Yeah.
So this is a tough game.
No question. Well, Greg, you and I will get a chance to watch it here from the NovaCare Complex. Sunday night football primetime. Once again, it'll be a late, late Sunday night, and early Monday morning for us next week. But it'll be worth it. It'll be a fun game for us to watch. Greg, appreciate the time here, as always, on Chalk Talk on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Great stuff from Greg, and you can follow him on Twitter just like I do, at Greg Cosell. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And you know I greatly appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on social media. That is one way to support the show, but the other is to go into Apple Podcasts or Stitcher and give us a rating and leave us a comment. We've had a ton of you guys go and do it over the last few weeks, and I really appreciate everybody. I wanted to give a shout-out to C. Wetzel20, who went on iTunes and rated the show and left a comment saying how much he enjoys listening to the podcast. So thanks to C. Wetzel and all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Okay, let's keep the show going. I told you that we would break down a rookie that has looked good for Seattle this year. That player is cornerback Shaquille Griffin, who we just talked about with Greg, the subject this week in our scouting report.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
All right, Shaquille Griffin, 6 foot and an eighth, 194 pounds, so good size for an NFL corner. He was a second-team All-AAC selection last year, led the team with 4 picks and 15 pass breakups last year, playing for defensive coordinator Eric Chenander, who Eagles connection. He was an Eagles assistant back in 2013, so Chenander went and rose pretty quickly, ended up the defensive coordinator down there in Central Florida, 2-year starter at right corner for the Knights. Again, his first year starting for Chenander, though he did get plenty of reps at left corner, so he's got experience on both sides of the formation, spent most of his time in college in press man, and that's always an advantage for players coming from that position that play a lot of press man at the college level. Tall, long corner, thick, sturdy frame. In press, he's got the strength to disrupt wide receivers at the line of scrimmage based off his college film. From off coverage, he's got the burst to close quickly at the catch point where he uses his length to go get the football on the ground. He certainly has enough straight line speed to run with NFL receivers. And while I didn't think he necessarily played to his 4.39 40-yard dash, he is plenty fast. He does a good job of staying in phase down the field, attached to his man's hip on vertical routes to deter throws. He displayed a knack for playing the football in the air, and he will climb the ladder to finish at the catch point for interceptions. Had a couple of starts at safety under his belt throughout his career, earlier in his career at Central Florida, and you can see why with the way he played against the run. Aggressive player, not afraid to get his nose dirty in the trenches, knows how to set the edge as a force guy against wide receivers, very comfortable attacking the line of scrimmage, and while he isn't a picture-perfect tackler, he does what's needed to get his man to the ground, and he was often used as a blitzer from the boundary. So a versatile guy, big, strong. From a negative standpoint, though, with Griffin, I didn't think in college that he used his length consistently to disrupt receivers early in the down, and that's something that they've worked on with him in that press scheme in Seattle. Definitely a little bit of stiffness with him there in transition. I thought, he tested like a great athlete. He was one of the best testers at the cornerback position in this draft class. But I didn't think he played like a great athlete. I thought he played like a good or a really good athlete, if that makes any sense. So, good athlete. I didn't think he played like a great one. Played very fast and loose in man coverage. There were times where I thought he took a little bit too much time to react to the top of opponent's stem downfield, and he seemed a little bit more instinctive in the quick game. As he got further away from the line of scrimmage, he looked less and less comfortable. I didn't think he was overly impressive reading things from zone coverage. So it was really interesting, honestly, to hear Greg's thoughts on the fact that he was a little bit struggling, early in the season mentally, and then got better and better and better as the season has progressed. And I agree, having watched him this year, he has gotten better in that area with his eyes over the course of the season. Gave up a good amount of big plays in college, and he needs to clean things up across the board. He got a little bit grabby. He was flagged a couple times last year. Could have been even more in his last season with Central Florida. Overall, though, I wrote that Shaquille Griffin had the physical traits that you want for a starting NFL corner. Thought he lacked the overall awareness and route recognition you would want from that position as an early starter, and he's kind of been forced into that role because of injuries in that secondary, but he could turn into something special with the proper coaching. Without knowing anything about him personally, it was tough to gauge if he would reach that ceiling. Overall, felt comfortable with him as a backup long-term with a very high ceiling, boomer bust type of player. So that's how I feel about Shaquille Griffin, who has turned into a nice player and I think has a bright future out there for the Seahawks. So he'll be a player that you have to watch for in this game, coming back into the starting lineup for former Eagle Byron Maxwell. All right, great stuff from Greg Cosell and all of you out there listening, whether you're on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and of course on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And again, one more time, take a few seconds, go rate the show, leave us a comment. Don't be afraid to leave a question on there as well, because I would love the ability to answer it here on the podcast. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I am Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.